by the fans. Welcome to the one and only non-league football show, brought to you by the magic of Audio Boom and all great podcasting platforms. You'll leave a space there to insert mention of anything you like. Another busy week this week, so delighted to say Dave Watters, PR man with the Evo Super Ryman League, joins us. Awesome. Afternoon, Dave.
Afternoon. I can even see myself on Skype here.
Can you? Good job you can't see technology. Me.
I can't. I'm just looking, admiring my grey hair.
Yeah, I'm admiring your grey hair too.
Thank you.
If only you knew the view I had at the moment. Also with us by the medium of the telephone, Mark Harris, chairman of the aforementioned Evo Stick Northern Premier League. Welcome, Mark.
Hello there, Caroline.
Hi, Mark.
Mark, thank you for joining us. We have whisked you in, as I said, via the medium of the telephone call, to chat about all things briefly with you. It's been a busy old few months for you, hasn't it? And you're only here, actually, to tell us where we are with Ilkeston at the moment. You're not. But
well, I
can
think,
you update me?
I think we've now explained and given as much guidance on the background to that. And it's good to see that Ilkeston Football Club is moving forward. It's good to see them playing games. So hopefully we won't need to touch that topic again.
Playing games in the truest sense. Talking of playing games, one of the big stories in non-league football, not just non-league football this week, but across the sporting pyramid, have you both seen the story of York? Their manager, Jackie McNamara, says if he doesn't get a positive result against Braintree this weekend, that's it. He's leaving the club. This is an odd one, Mark, isn't it, for a manager to say, privately at least, he might go and say to his chairman privately, and I'm sure you've had this with managers before, all right, this weekend if it doesn't go right, then I'll tender my resignation. But to come out publicly and say it.
Well, it's hard to say, isn't it, and until you know unless you know the actual circumstances of each club, and these circumstances are very, very rarely identical. We're now, 10, 11 games into the season, and I think that's how most chairmen would seek to judge what their management is doing. Obviously, the result that they had at Guiseley earlier in the week will not have helped Jackie McNamara's position. But it could either be seen as an attempt to get a real reaction out of the York City team. It could be seen as almost paving the way. Very hard to tell.
I can't think of an example of that. I've never heard of that before. I'm sure it has happened before, but to sort of telegraph that to the players in advance, as Mark says, it's a different way of kind of putting pressure on them, different mind games. But I can't think of an example of that happening before in non-league football.
Well, I think the reality is it happens all the time. Mm. The different bit is this is going to come into the public domain.
Yeah, the fact that it's public, yeah.
Wow. But and it's odd given that, so what happens this weekend? Say they beat Braintree, which is possible given it's been tough for Hakan Heretin since he's come into Braintree's last two games. If they beat Braintree, then is that the right response he's got, Mark, from his players? Did the chairman then say to him, all right, so what happens next game? I think they've got an FA Cup match against Curzon Ashton next.
The problem arises, and I'll give you a scenario. So let's say on Saturday, the York team put in an absolutely fantastic performance and fall to a really dodgy last-minute penalty. Not, of course, that we ever have dodgy penalties, last-minute or otherwise. But let's say that the circumstances are that. The manager's now painted himself a little bit into a corner there. Conversely, what happens? They win the game and suffer another couple of bad results. The problem is you wind up painting yourself into a corner, but as we know, a week can be a very long time in football. 24 hours can be a very long time in football, as some recently departed managers will testify.
And what about Jason McGill, the York chairman, Mark? We've ridden that bandwagon with him when they got promotion and all things were looking rosy. Should he, as a chairman, have been putting his arm around Jackie McNamara and saying, right, perhaps it is time to go, you know, and he'd be helping him make these decisions?
I think Jason's a very, very experienced chairman, and it's not for me to give him any advice at all. You'll handle different people in different ways. It's a little bit trying to come up with a manual for man management. And I don't know Jackie McNamara. I'm not aware of the ins and outs of the situation at York. Looking from the outside, as I say, it puts the manager in a difficult position. As a chairman, you'll be looking at things, hopefully objectively as well, but there'll be all sorts of influences. There'll be influences through social media, and the fans will have their opinion. You'll be looking at the commercial impact of the results, but only Jason will know the level of application, the various criteria for which he appointed that manager in the first place, and whether they're being delivered. Very, very tough, and as I say, every situation is different, but Jason's a highly experienced chairman.
And Dave, listening to some of the fans, reading some of their comments as well, one fan with the old, "I actually hope we lose this weekend see a change made." I mean, that's difficult when you get to that situation.
He's in the, that fan's obviously in the same club of you know, fans that start calling for managers to go after three or four games into the season. He's obviously got people against him there, if that's the kind of comments that have been made on social media after what he's done. But going back to what Mark said there about Jason McGill, surely he must have been as surprised as anybody by his manager's statement to come out with that. You know, he probably would have wanted to discuss that in advance of him. And as Mark said, you know, why box yourself into a corner? But we'll see what happens. It's interesting.
We did ask Jason and Jackie to come on the show. Jackie, I believe, is taking training at the time that we're recording this too. I know that Jason has pretty much been put through the ringer over different interviews that he's done over the past few days as well. So emotionally, it's quite fraught, I imagine, at York at the moment. They've also got this ongoing issue with the local paper too, and some of the stories that have come out in the local press. So all not right at the moment at York. So certainly something will happen one way or the other come this weekend. What about in your league at the moment then, Mark? We got to that stage of the season where it's cold, the rain's gonna start. Have we all looked at just to be the doom and gloom merch?
I don't know where you got that from.
It's not cold yet.
It's an absolutely beautiful day.
Yeah, exactly.
Here in the northwest of England, and everything in the world is wonderful.
Oh, it's cold and wet somewhere in the world.
We haven't had any postponements yet, believe me.
Hurrah,
seriously.
Yeah, hurrah.
Let's not wish them.
How are things looking in the league at the moment then, Mark?
Well, as you rightly say, we're 10, 11 games in. The season is well underway. Always at this point of the year, you look at what's happening in the FA Cup, and we've got a number of teams that are now within striking distance of the first round proper of the FA Cup, which is always a huge milestone. What you have to say, and it would be wrong of me not to reference it, is the season so far has been very much overshadowed by the tragedy involving Daniel Wilkinson, the Shore Lane player who passed away. And we should never underestimate the impact of that, not just on Daniel's immediate family and his colleagues, but on the Brickhouse team that were the other half of the game in which Daniel sadly passed away, but also across the Northern Premier League and non-league generally, because sadly it seems that these events seem to be happening more regularly, and it could happen to anybody. So that's the first thing I want to say. Other than that, we've seen a great start to the season. There's some teams going extremely well in our Premier Division. I think it's looking pretty much wide open right now. Any number of teams are in with a great shout there. Same in Division 1 North and also in Division 1 South.
And on the subject of Daniel Wilkinson, the response from the non-league family that we talk about, I think, Mark, over £10,000 has already been raised in his honour, and Shore Lane, I know the fund still continues too, that people can give money to, but seeing that sort of response.
Yes, it's very hard to take any form of positive out of a tragedy of this nature.
Absolutely.
It was, however, I think, very, very heartwarming is not quite the right word to use. But what we did see was everybody rallying around, not just in non-league football as well. The Football Association were very quickly in play to help provide counselling and access to advice. The Professional Footballers Association were involved, because obviously Daniel had been a professional player. Thankfully, we were able to call upon the chairman of Tunbridge, who had been through exactly the same situation. Mm. He provided absolutely invaluable advice. So it was very much a case of people rallying around in the family of football, not just non-league. Mm. But all that you can do in a situation like that, remembering that this could happen to absolutely anybody, and there was a defibrillator there, All you can do is to encourage your clubs to ensure that they do recognise the what-if scenario and that they put all reasonable precautions in place. It'll never, ever be 100% coverage. You'll never, ever stop terrible things like this happening. But as I say, it's very hard to take positives, but I'm sure that if Daniel were with us, he would want the family of non-league to go forward. But he certainly will not be forgotten.
It's great that they've set up this Daniel Wilkinson Foundation as well. Like Mark said, they've raised over £10,000 already. I think it's worth giving a mention again to Brick House Town as well and their players and the club there, because it happened at St Giles's Road and they've since retired their number 5 shirt. They it's like a warm-up. They've got a special warm-up kit they're running out to for every match until the end of the season. So he will not be forgotten. And actually, there was another tragedy in the Northern Premier League with a player. Can't use the word fortunately, but it wasn't on the pitch. It was a young keeper called Luke Samples at Colville Town. He died in a car accident last Saturday night. So our condolences go to the club and his family.
Very much.
Absolutely. Mark, we are going to let you go in just a moment. One quick final word from you. We were speaking last week about this reorganisation that's going to happen of the Football League and the impact that could have on the National League. But of course, that impact would then be felt in your league too.
Very much so. I think the important thing, I think, is that nothing is going to happen until the English Football League decides through consultation with its members how it wants to progress. So, which is very, very frustrating for those of us that actually do want to push the reorganisation of the National League system forward. There are perhaps more unanswered questions than there are answers right now. Is it going to be 8 clubs coming out of the National League potentially? Is it going to be 14 clubs coming out of that competition? And clearly they would resist that. I think the important thing to note is that you're going to have different attitudes. So there are going to be clubs that would look at it as an opportunity. And you know, who doesn't want an opportunity to play at a higher level of the game? But the sad reality is not all clubs are immediately capable of operating at a higher level. I'm not saying that from National League to the Football League. I'm making the observation generally across. So as we saw last time, there was a reorganisation with the creation of what is now National Leagues North and South. There is this phenomenon of sucking clubs up from lower down the system. At that time, the Northern Premier League certainly lost its, as the Southern League and the Isthmian League did, lost some of our bigger clubs. That's a fact of life. And what we've got to do is to try and ensure, emphasis on the try, that the overall impact does not wind up setting the National League system back. That's certainly the view of the of colleagues within the Alliance, as far as I can see, and certainly from a Northern Premier League perspective. We would resist any attempt to actually dilute the quality of what we've got, purely in clubs' own interests. Because the last thing you want when you're running a football club is to suddenly find yourself at a level which you might not be able to afford, where the required investment in ground grading is substantial, or actually simply the culture of the club doesn't want it.
Mark Harris from the NPL, thank you very much for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Mark, chairman, of course, of the Evo Stick Northern Premier League. We'll talk more about York in just a moment when we'll hear from Adam Lockwood, the manager at Guiseley. So we'll talk to Adam Lockwood about that 6-1 win over York midweek, hopefully in the next 10 minutes or so. But first up, Phil Austin joins us, president of Jersey Football Association. Phil, the news this week then that your application to join UEFA has been denied. We covered this when you initially wanted to put this in, but what's happened?
Well, we submitted a formal application to UEFA way back in last December, the 9th of December 2015, and we'd really heard nothing in between. We chased them up, and then just very recently, we had a letter from them stating that the executive of UEFA had decided not to put our membership application forward to its membership, what they call their Congress, because in their view, we fell foul of Article 5 of their statutes. And Article 5 says to be a member of UEFA, you have to be an independent country as recognised by United Nations.
What about Gibraltar then? Sorry to steam in there, Phil.
That's a good point. And if you look at UEFA's membership, probably half of them are not independent countries as recognised by United Nations. What happened with Gibraltar was they applied for UEFA membership about 14 years ago. And immediately Spain, which of course Spain and Gibraltar are not the best of friends, Spain objected and basically said to UEFA, you've got to find a way of keeping them out. So UEFA thought about it and said, we've just brought this new rule in to say you have to be an independent country if you want to be a member. You're not an independent country, Gibraltar. You can't come in. Gibraltar took them to court, the Court of Arbitration for Sport called CAS, and over a 12-year period went back there three times and eventually won their case. So Gibraltar were admitted, what, a year or two ago, but many other members are not independent countries. And this is the basis on which they've rejected ours, but one that we're prepared to challenge on.
Which could be costly, I guess. People will be screaming, as this is the non-league football show, at us right now as to why we're doing this story, Phil. And I guess many will say, why don't you just go the Guernsey route?
Well, the Guernsey route's an interesting one. We've looked very carefully at that, but we don't think that's added a lot to Guernsey football. I've got great admiration for what Guernsey have done, but Guernsey FC was a new club that was set up. They've essentially taken the 30 best players from the other clubs, and Guernsey only have seven clubs, much smaller set of than us. They've taken the 30 best players from those clubs, and they play for a new club, Guernsey FC, in the UK League. That has really decimated the domestic football and demoralised their domestic football. Guernsey FC went on. They had two great seasons where they won promotions, but now they've sort of, I think, they would say themselves, they've sort of peaked. They've had a difficult start to this season, and it will. You know, we wish them all the best here. We talk to those guys, but we don't know how sustainable that model is. But the big issue overall is, what's it done for Guernsey football? And we're not sure overall it's benefited Guernsey football.
Well, Guernsey, of course, not here to defend themselves, Dave Waters from the Ryman League, what would you say in response to that?
I'd have to take that defend them on this. I think that for a start, they've put Guernsey football on the map for the rest of the UK, know all about them now. Their crowds, I think if you look at their crowds over the last two or three seasons, they're not dipping. They had a great crowd recently. Well, they have good crowds for most of their games.
They do have good crowds. They have dropped. They've dropped from about 1,000 to about 700, but I'm well aware that's way above what any other club in that league gets.
Well, most of them, yeah, that's right. And maybe is that just the figures from this season so far? Because as you would know, it all depends on who you happen to be playing in your fixtures. It may
sure.
be that some
I
of the
I would
bigger...
say their average is probably about 700 this year from what I've seen, yeah.
But the thing I'd just, one small point, maybe it's a bit too fluffy, but I know that the Ryman League clubs from the mainland have really enjoyed going there. Guernsey have really enjoyed going over to play on the mainland as well. And surely the overall, the rising profile in the football in the island is going to... I accept what you're saying about some of those other clubs may be feeling a bit hard done by if they've lost some of their players. I wasn't aware of that, actually. But I just think, say, with yourselves, couldn't you just put together a representative side? Isn't there a way of doing it where you're still fair to the people in your own league? But you, Jersey, then, could be, playing in the FA Cup and doing all sorts of great things.
Well, we could. And in the past, we've had clubs playing in Hampshire League Cups and so on and so forth. I suppose the essence, Dave, is our clubs don't want to do that. Our league don't want to do it. They don't see that's the route. It probably costs Guernsey something like £300,000 a year. And it's interesting what you say about clubs want to go over. Now, I won't name this club, but I was with a club in that league last year, and they were saying that, them and one or two other clubs were getting a bit fed up having to go to Guernsey. So I don't know. Look, we've talked to Guernsey. I'm a big supporter of what they do, but the essence is we've chosen not to go down that route because we don't think it's in the best development. We have 16 clubs here with various leagues, and we've got a good domestic league, but it is in danger of stagnating. And what we want is a competitive games program for our representative side, not just for our men, but for our women. One of the great benefits of UEFA would be that our league champions, would go in the qualifying stages of the Champions League. Our runners-up would go in the qualifying for Europa. But in addition to that, our under-17s, 19s, 21s and seniors, men and women, would be eligible to play in European championships, you know, the various age groups. And we think that would be fantastic development. We've got a great centre of excellence here for men and women that starts at the age of about 10, goes right through to 18, a good club structure. What we haven't got is the icing on the cake of that, if you know, at the top, which is a competitive games programme for our representative sides. And it's not just about Jersey FC, the men's team. It's about the development of the whole football programme.
Well, you've got
it's incredible. I mean, an incredibly interesting debate to be had, I think, Bill. I wonder whether, you know, people listening to this at the moment, also that follow us at Non-League Show on social media, are you after the input of others to see whether this is
worth... Yeah, we'd love it. Obviously, ideally, we'd love support. You know, one of the things is we Jersey are part of what's called the International Island Games Association, which is a big sporting event held every 2 years. And it's not just football. There's 18 events. And indeed, Jersey, we hosted those games last year, 2015. The year before that, they were in Bermuda. And what I was going to say in that is the football... element of that, of the 18 sports, is the biggest tournament within the games. And historically, we've played in there. We've played Bermuda, we've played the Cayman, we've played the Faroes, we've played Gibraltar. All of those sides now have progressed. They're either in FIFA or UEFA, and they don't play in the Island Games football competition anymore. So we feel as though, you know, we're getting left behind. Interestingly, you know, our cricket team, Jersey cricket team, are going off in 2 weeks' time to play in World 4 League cricket. That's what they play in. You know, we want to, our bowls team play in the World Bowls competition. We send athletes to the Commonwealth Games. And yet football was sort of blocked where we've hit a glass ceiling. And we think, you know, if we want our footballers to develop, we really need to push on and get regular international competition, if you like.
Phil, can I just say one last thing? Sorry.
Yeah, go on, make it quick.
Yeah, sorry. You have got your own parliament there on the island, famously, haven't you?
Yes, we have, yeah.
You've just given us a load of other precedents or whatever. I think you should get fundraising, get the money together and go to CAS.
Well, that's what we're doing. We've lodged an appeal at CAS. And we're waiting for a date for our day in court with UEFA. And people have stepped forward locally to help us. This will be round one of what we assume will be several rounds. But we're very keen to progress it. If there's anyone out there, you know, is interested, let's have your views. We'd love your support in this battle.
Yeah, best of luck.
Bill, thanks very much for joining us. Phil Austin, President of the Jersey FA, joining us on the Non-League Show. You are listening to the Non-League Football Show. Dave Watters, Caroline Barker, and a cast of thousands this week. Dave, we were just talking to the president of Jersey FA. You know, it's an interesting discussion in so much as we've seen Guernsey come the non-league football route and go up and through. Feels like they've levelled off, but for Jersey to go completely the opposite way.
Well, Jersey they're not messing around with, you know, entering sort of the domestic game. They want to go straight into kind of the international scene. From talking to Phil and talking about the way they've been treated by UEFA and the way UEFA have treated other islands or territories, whatever, Gibraltar, etc., it sounds to me like they really have got a case to go ahead and do that. But I still stand by my comments saying they'd be very welcome to join the Ryman League. Or the Southern League, in fact.
just because you want a trip to Jersey.
Indeed.
Right, we're going to rattle through a few more of the stories this week then. As promised, Adam Lockwood, manager at Guiseley, joins us. Hiya, Adam.
Hiya.
Hi, Adam.
well, we're all right. What an incredible week for you. Five months, even a floodlight failure. These are the headlines this week. And you managed to get that first win.
Yeah, obviously. Bit of a relief for everybody involved with the club, but... to be honest, I sort of finished the game, in a bit of a somber mood because I know that that changing room is full of talent and been underperforming, and not so much underperforming, but not getting results that we deserved, and we haven't been far away. One thing and another has caused us not to get the results that we wanted, but obviously... we got the right result the other night, so pleasing that way. But
where did that come from, Adam? Though, I mean, it was a big, big win as well.
Yeah, I've said it to everybody, and I've been saying it over the last couple of weeks that we'd come a long way, and I wanted the lads to maintain the standards. We've had a few games where we've dropped below them, but generally, since I've took charge, I've been quite happy with them. we hadn't had the results for, like I said, for one reason or another, but I had full confidence that that would come one day. I wasn't too sure it'd be a six on the first win, but I knew that we were capable of getting good results in this league. So the challenge now is to maintain that and maintain the standards.
Yeah, 6-1 over York, and whilst kind of your result and the floodlight failure captured the headlines at the time, subsequently you'll be well aware that it's the comments of Jackie McNamara, that the York boss, that have now taken the headlines, saying that if he doesn't get a positive result this weekend against Braintree, that's it, he's walking out. I mean, it's kind of a risky business, but you can see how that might galvanise his team, Adam.
Yeah, you know, other people's business is not really for me to comment on. But we've had our own troubles ourselves at our club. We've obviously not getting results, so that's all I've been focusing on. And to be honest, you could tell with the performance of our lads, we didn't like anything else surrounding the game or affect us. And that is one of the biggest things that I really was pleased with the lads, because, you know, you've seen it all before where games get interrupted for different reasons and it can be a turning point in the game, but they were very professional and seeing the game out in the correct manner.
I know, and I appreciate you don't want to talk about Jackie, but for yourself, when you're in kind of a rut, and it was a rut, wasn't it, that you guys were in, as a manager, what do you kind of say to yourself? And is it this kind of key period for talking to friends, to family, those that you really trust as well in the game?
Yeah, and to be honest, at those times, the people that come to the forefront are the ones that, if they come to the forefront in those times, then you know they're the right people to surround yourself with. So, and I have had a lot of support from throughout my whole career, obviously, family and friends, ex-colleagues, ex-managers. And I can only thank everybody for that. I'm one to entertain big challenges, and it certainly was a big challenge to take over at the club, and really looking forward to it. So when I did, and like I said, been trying to prepare right for every game leading up to the win the other night, and it won't change moving forward for the rest of the season.
Well, I wonder if there's an extra spring in the step that you've seen in training this week ahead of Southport?
Obviously, it helps. It takes a little bit of pressure, and I think the lads did feel it at times. I'm not going to lie that, you know, the opportunities where people had chances and they didn't really believe in themselves 100%, and it told. Hopefully, it will be a positive for us. You've got to be careful that you don't become complacent as well. Like I said earlier, that I'm wanting to maintain standards week in, week out, and that's not just in games and training and around the club. And I feel that if we do that, then the results will come. So I can only really control that, and that's what I'll be bashing home to the lads, really.
Well, what a couple of weeks it's been in your new job, Adam, and we wish all the best of luck for this weekend too. Obviously the Southport fans won't, but well done in getting that first result. I didn't mean that to sound condescending, but
we'll catch up
with you later in the season.
Good luck.
All right, Adam. Thank you.
Well done, Adam.
Cheers, Adam.
Adam Lockwood, after that first result for Guiseley this week. I mean, he was named manager just kind of a couple of weeks ago, September 20th or 21st. And to do that, I know he'd been at the club anyway, but to do that and to get that result, Dave, just shows how you rely on your mates around you, the players around you, to pull through for you.
Yeah, no, he's obviously hasn't lost his dressing room. That's for certain. You know, and best of luck to him. I really wanted to say to him then at the end, although I don't think he really wanted to talk about another manager's behaviour, but would he try that? You know, if things do go a bit south later on in the season, would he consider, you know, threatening to walk out? I would have thought there's quite a lot of managers out there that if they went down that road, their players would go, great, right, we'll lose and we'll get rid of him. So it's a dangerous game to play, that's for certain, if the dressing room's not behind you. But it's great to see him, you know, to get a win like that, to give him a huge confidence boost ahead of playing Southport anyway.
Well, and it makes a difference too when you've been there and you've been playing with this team anyway, yeah. And you come through and you can gather that momentum on. Adam Lockwood then, the manager at Guiseley. If there's anything you've heard on the show so far or still to come, you can get in touch with us at Non-League Show. You can do the introduction, Dave.
Sorry. And we've got Phil Annetts now on with the FA Cup coming up this weekend. Famously known at FA Cup Fat File, my main man. Phil, how are you?
Well, of course, all that was factually correct with that had that been on last week's show. But of course, FA Cup is not this weekend.
Oh no, I've struck again. No,
it's Saturday. He was doing so well, Phil, wasn't he?
Saturday week, of course. I just can't wait for the FA Cup like you, Phil, to come running again.
I know. 2 weeks is too long between ties. We want them every week.
Yeah.
Well, of course you do, Phil. The draw this week then for the FA Cup. Who are the teams that stood out for you? The draws that stood out for you?
Well, there's quite a few obviously that stand out. There's a big opportunity for the step. Five clubs that are still in the tournament. We've got Westfields from the Midland Football League. They are up against a team called Leiston. I never know how you pronounce
that. Top of the Ryman League, Leiston. Although I pronounce it wrong. Maybe Carolyn would know. You're from more over that way, aren't you?
I've always said Leiston, but there we go.
Well, both teams are going extremely well in their respective divisions. I mean, Westfield have got 100% record, so... in the league, and they're doing fantastic in the FA Cup, having scored 21 goals already.
I think this will be a bridge too far for them personally, because Leiston really are flying, and you know, in the Ryman Premier at the moment. So, but I have to say that, don't I, because I represent the Ryman. But so good luck to them, to Westfield. Yeah.
Well, the good news is that there'll be a team from either Step 4 or Step 5 into the first round of the FA Cup, which is always a good thing to happen. And then.
Are you talking about the Northern Premier League? There's two ties there where they're all Northern Premier League ties, aren't there? Spennymoor.
There's a couple there, aren't there? There's Nantwich are playing Stourbridge.
That's right, big one.
That's one I do know that's happening. There's a couple where they're from the First Division South are playing the Premier League as well, where you've got Lincoln United at home to Spennymoor.
That's right, yeah, that's another great tie. And of course, Stamford have got Wrexham, which is a huge game for them if they could win that. And... Sorry, Phil. We're talking about you, but I just the coveted first round really is in sight now. TV money.
It's really exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy for everyone to have a view and have excitement about the fourth quarterfinal, because it is the big one for the non-league club to get an opportunity to get a bit of national coverage.
It's also that kind of 12.5 grand you get from this round for getting there, isn't it?
Well, there's that as well, but I'm sure that's secondary to the prestige of being able to step out into an FA Cup first round tie.
Yeah. I know was that me thinking with my old chief exec hat on?
It's not just that 12.5 though, is it? It's when you add up the money before that, you've had a 7.5, a 3. I mean, I think they're all up to about £20,000+ now as well, aren't they?
They just started off at the beginning of August, Bishop Auckland and Westfield. You are for that kind of level. Both of those teams are there to have Step 5 clubs still going at this stage.
Could I just go off message for a second, just inject possibly...
Unlike you.
Yeah, just inject possibly a bit of controversy. I don't know what everybody else thinks about this, but whenever we get to this round every year, all the National League clubs, they get dropped in, you know, like VIPs right at the last hurdle.
Yeah.
It's like the Grand National, them getting, you know, dropped in the final furlong, isn't it, to get to the first round. Do you think that's fair, Phil?
I think it is a bit imbalanced towards the bigger teams. If you think about it, by the end of this round, there'll be 92 teams plus the 128 teams left. Mm. We started off with 736, so 80% of the clubs who entered already will be knocked out before we even get to the first round book.
That's right.
I think we should be spreading it out a bit more. Give the lower level teams a chance to play the higher level teams more frequently. Mm. And we've seen that they can more than match the giant killers in the last round, with Taunton Town and Potters Bar both being beaten across 2 steps to the bottom.
Yeah. Well, I just think in recent years we've seen too few, you know, Chesham United, Hastings,
you know,
those kind of teams from steps 3 and 4 from the leagues, again, sorry, that I represent. But, the, you know, the way it's set up at the moment, they all kind of cut each other's throats in the second and the third qualifying rounds. And I just think that they should change it. Sorry.
And there's none left. It was last year, Eastleigh were the only club to make it to the third round. And that was the first time that we'd had only one representative in the third round for a heck of a long time.
That's right.
At least this time they've got Eastleigh up against Northleigh, which deserves apparently to have a referee named Lee. That's Tim, our producer's joke. So I've just said that for him and for no one else's benefit. Phil, it's a pleasure, as you know. I'm glad Tim's laughing at his own jokes. Phil, we shall let you go, but at FA Cup Fact File, if you want to go to bed and marry anyone in this life, it should be Phil. Alongside his social media presence. Phil Annette's joining us then on the non-league show. What? He loves a good proposal. I'll give it to him every time, the proposal that is. You are listening to the non-league show.
I just have to not let my wife listen to this show anymore.
Cut him off, she's shouting from the background. Phil, thank you for joining us.
Good luck, Phil.
No, thanks, guys. Have a good weekend. Speak to you soon.
Look forward to your tweets.
So we've already spoken, Dave, about that great win for Guiseley, 6-1 over York, despite club light failure, lights coming back on, going on to win that one after, 5 months without that vital, vital win. There was a brilliant comeback this week that I'm sure didn't escape your notice in the Ryman League. After a disappointing start to the Premier Division, Leatherhead, of course, recently appointed Jimmy Bullard as their new boss, and they came from behind with him on the sidelines to a 3-3 draw with table toppers Leicester. That was on the back of an away win at Sudbury last weekend. Chairman Richard Brady joins us now. Hiya, Richard.
Hi, Richard.
How are you doing, Caroline? You okay?
Yeah, all brilliant. With, I tell you what, you can clear something up for us. It's Leicester, isn't it? Not Leicester or Leicester.
Is it Leicester?
They say it's pronounced Leicester, but...
You know, there you go.
I bow to thee. No, Leicester from now on. Right.
Right, yeah, Leicester from now on. So Richard, that's the important stuff done. What was it like this... So you were behind, we saw Jimmy on the sidelines, barking out his orders, very impressive according to our spies there, and you come back for this 3-3 draw.
Yeah, well, I think to be fair, I think like their own manager and their sort of board of directors were very complimentary. I mean, we deserve to get back into it, but I suppose when you're 3-1 down with 8 minutes to go, it doesn't really look, well, even less than that, doesn't really look too promising. But like I say, I think it was testament to the boys that they just kept doing the right things, kept passing the ball, kept moving it, and not only did we get back to 3-3, we also hit the post within that. Not to win it, but we hit the post, so we had an opportunity. So it was sort of one-way traffic the last sort of 15, 20 minutes.
And this is against the top of the table side as well, Richard, people that don't realise, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I thought it was difficult. I mean, when you look at we put in principles of play and a philosophy with Jim and how we want to play. And when you think Leicester, they've won 8 and they've drawn 2, and we were without Joe Healy, David Norris, and Tom Bradbrook last night. So pretty much 3 of your main, your strongest players, so you could argue, and against top of the table. So obviously it was all against that and sort of 3-1 down. So. But I think we're sort of in that sort of mould at the minute of the lads know whoever steps up of the way that we want to play and they understand it and they've bought into it.
Can I just say as well, bringing in Jimmy Bullard, obviously the man knows the game, he's obviously inspiring the players and stuff, but I have to say, it was an absolute PR masterstroke 2 weeks ago. I was sitting there, I think you appointed him at lunchtime on a Saturday, didn't you? And it was like, Jimmy Bullard, get in there. I rang the non-league paper straight away and said, Dave, don't worry, we already know about it. And you were straight on the front page, I think, Sundays ago, weren't you? And you were going to get so, you know, let's hope he does a great job, and I'm sure he will, great guy and stuff. And I've seen him on TV only, obviously. But you're going to get so much coverage off the back of that, it's untrue. Being your next manager yourself, hopefully you're going to give him a good chance and not sack him.
I think the thing was for us, there's the inside and then there's the outside. And there's no doubt in terms of the buzz, which Jimmy didn't totally understand. And when I said to Jim, I said, listen, like, the players are going to want to play for you. It's going to, you know, people want to play for Jimmy Bullard. And overnight, we've gone from probably just, you know, like every other manager, you're talking to players and, oh, it's about money or it's about this. Mm. But we're not doing that anymore. It's like, oh, if we're interested in a player and the phone's ringing, they're like, you know, and Jimmy's enthusiasm and stuff is second to none. But what I'm saying is that with Jim, you get this enthusiasm, this infectious nature, and you also get this, all the PR stuff on the outside, that's brilliant. But myself and Jim are just football people. So when I spoke to Jim, it was a no-brainer for me because he wants to do his badges, he wants to learn how to manage. And for me, it was like I always thought when I went to meet him, I thought, well, if he's open and he wants to learn and he wants to improve, and he understands being a player is nothing like being a manager, then we've got half a chance. And the fact that he was totally open and he's totally willing to learn and understand, and he's cutting his teeth. And it's actually, for me, massively refreshing to have someone who doesn't need to do it, who come from non-league. He could be sitting at home playing golf every day, you know, in terms of financially. But what he wants to do, because he loves football and he wants to be a good manager. And for me, that's like, you can't beat that.
He was saying exactly that. I literally, this morning, I was taking my kids to school and I had Radio Surrey on, and bang, Jimmy Bullard comes on the show there. And he was talking about Leatherhead and how impressed he was with the club and all good football people and stuff. So I hope it's a marriage made in heaven for you. Sounds like it.
And it should be, given we had Gift and Noel Williams on last week, who's down butchered at Burnham, down at Burnham, managing there too. And it is actually, why not take that, not a step backwards, Leatherhead, a great club, big times in the past as well that we've seen Leatherhead, but why not, you know, I guess Jimmy could, if he really wanted to, go rattle the door at a football league club and walk straight in. But for you, Richard, given that you are chairman, director of football, youth academy you head up to, you've been manager, as Dave said, how
that
important
list,
is it also...
Isn't it?
probably been in the mascot outfit. How important is it for you as well to get someone in that's not just enthusiastic, but will pull his way and really engage with the club?
Well, I mean, for me, it's like yesterday. It's given me a new enthusiasm, and like, because last night we didn't get out of the club until about 11:30, 11:45. And the facilities manager was trying to get rid of us. It was me, Jimmy Bullard, Steve Salis, and again, just talking football, literally just talking football, and but not in, you know, in terms of, you know, knowledgeable tactical, you know, how and what and who we thought done well, what we can do to improve it, what we're going to do during training. And we've linked up with one of my good friends, Scott Lindsay at Forest Green. So he's sort of advisory to me. We're very good mates, but so we talk football continually and they're not doing too bad either. So they trained at Leatherhead on Tuesday at our ground before they went and thumped all the shot 4-0. But what Scott's doing is sort of, you know, keeping an eye on Jimmy. And that's a go-to for Jimmy as well. So with someone like Scott and Mark Cooper in your corner, that's also been really helpful. And like I say, the other thing with Jimmy, which people don't realise, is that he's got a lot of time on his hands. So he lives and breathes it. Whereas, you know, he's been speaking to players today, and I sort of said to him, you know, most non-league managers would be going to work, you know, whatever they'd be doing, they can't talk to their players. But he has that availability and that sort of, and you can't beat having time to sort of think and strategise for what you're going to do moving forward.
Unlike you, he's got no time at all, Richard, all these jobs you're doing, so we'll let you go. Seeing as he's got so much time on his hands, maybe we'll come down and record a show when you're training one night and you can teach our boys a few things or two.
No problem. I mean, you're more than welcome to come down. Like I say, that's the other side of it. Jim's always got time for everyone. I mean, I know, like, he's got this sort of, you know, this status and this sort of fun lad and that, but he's always got time for anyone who wants to come down. So you're more than welcome to come down to the club and we can do a little piece, no problem at all.
Yeah, I don't want to talk to him. I just want you to make me a cup of tea. Richard, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Best no luck. Problem. Best All of luck, best. Richard. Take care.
Cheers, yeah. Richard. Richard care. Brady, Bye. Chairman at Leatherhead, and every other job as well. Yeah. I said they're a big non-league club. They are, Dave, aren't they? We've
oh,
seen
they are,
Leatherhead
yeah.
over the years. And,
oh, and the and, FA Cup and the Leatherhead Lip, Chris Kelly and all those kind of happy days for them. But I was so excited when I saw Jimmy Bullard had been appointed. And I just think it's great for them. They really will. Obviously, he's having an effect on the pitch. And I just think he could be a really good fit there for him. And I've said this many times before. I know there's probably people go, oh, shut up, Dave. But I hate seeing top players just getting parachuted into top managerial jobs. Mm. I think that they should start off lower down, you know, like Martin O'Neill, lots of other managers over the years. And you know, just do a little bit of groundwork, cut their teeth a little bit, and then they will be better managers when they go on. But saying that, Gareth Southgate got parachuted into Middlesbrough once, didn't he? Now he's the England manager, so I think I better get my coat and go home.
Well, let's bring in our final guest this week from the National South, where my team, Chelsea City, had a weekend off, fully prepared for action to go again. Let's speak to Scott Bartlett, who's become the new manager at Western Supermare this week. Hiya, Scott.
Hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. What about you?
Yeah, good. Yeah, everything's good with me. Training this evening, so we're looking forward to seeing the boys again.
Yeah, you've come from, you were caretaker boss at Forest Green. You've obviously got the experience, but what was it about Western that attracted you to the job?
Well, I like the club anyway, because I was there for, albeit a short period of time, but I like what they're trying to do. They're trying to do things the right way, get the infrastructure right. I think there's some really, really good people to work with there, and there's some good players as well. So for me, where I am at the moment in my career, being able to carry on with the academy at Forest Green, it was just a really good fit. So we all explored it, and it worked out.
There's no conflicts of interest there or anything like that, Scott, between the two clubs and your work at both of them?
No, I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all. Mm. It's very separate, in fact, you know, working at under 18 level and then with first team, but if anything, it'll be a positive.
Maybe there's a few youngsters you can borrow. You can persuade the Rovers to lend you.
That's right. I'm sure Mark Cooper knows and trusts me. So that's always a big thing when you're looking to loan a player out. So I'm sure us at Western would have first refusal on the Forest Green boys. And you know, knowing them inside out, it's half the battle when you're making a signing. So yeah. We've got to get the right people through the door at Western if we're going to make any changes. They've got to be desperate to play for the football club, first and foremost. And if it's someone I know, then obviously it makes that decision easier.
When you look at jobs like this, and you said you want to work on the structure at the club as well, Scott, how much have you spoken with the chairman about how long that will take? Because that's not an overnight thing, is it?
Nah, of course it's not. And in time, the board of directors are going to be there for a long, long time. There'll be, for them to get the club exactly where they want it, there might be three or four managers. It might take them 10 years or more. But they're building from, you know, they've put in some really good building blocks there. They're developing the training ground. The pitch is second to none anyway. They've already got a good base of footballers there. So listen, they're trying to do it the right way. I believe with, where I've worked for the last 5 years, they're in a similar position to where Forest Green was when David Hockaday took over 5 or 6 years ago. So there's lots of things that are very similar, and I see a real sort of area of progression. There's lots of things that we can tweak and improve. Lots of little things really that will make a big difference going forward.
And on that Forest Green note, of course, it's still not guaranteed their promotion to the Football League this season, of course. But you'll have seen how long that progression can take. Have you tried to be realistic with expectations as well about where you think you can take this club over the next season, the next couple of seasons?
Yeah, of course. I'm confident of raising the levels at the club. On the pitch, obviously, is the most important thing, but off the pitch as well. Forest Green have gone about it a slightly different way. They're desperate to get promotion now, and I think you know that they've improved year on year. So. You know, last year, getting to the playoff final and narrowly missing out was as close as you can get. I do believe they'll get promoted this year. I think Mark's doing a great job behind the scenes. So for me, with Western, I'm really looking forward to the immediate challenge of you know, getting instilling some confidence in the players, looking at the squad and see where we need to balance it in certain areas perhaps, and adding to a good group.
Scott, we wish you all the best of luck, apart from when you play Chelmsford, of course. And we will catch up with you later in the season.
Best
Thank
luck
you.
There, Scott.
Thanks a lot.
Thank Brilliant. You. Thanks, Scott. Scott Bartlett, the new boss down at Western. And Dave, you know, great to hear this kind of link up, I guess, with, we've said it before, so-called bigger clubs, although he'd hope that Western and Forest Green will be on a par at some stage soon. But lending kids across to, that's where your blood youngsters in. This is the far harder leagues to be blooding them in. It's the old kind of leagues that we would have seen maybe, I don't know, 20 odd years ago, the combination leagues that you would have stuck your kids in first to toughen them up. Not this kind of, let's bring in the old Premier League B team's suggestion that, of course, has been blown out the window now.
No, he's any players that go down there to play for him at Western Supermare, it'll be a great grounding for them and stuff. So you can see why him and Mark Cooper will probably work together like that and stuff. But I was going to obviously he's got to go now. He's a busy man, but I'm just wondering what the potential there is in the town, because I think we shouldn't forget the big difference with Forest Green is that, you know, they've got some serious money behind them and stuff, haven't they? And I just would like to have asked him about what the crowds in the town, are people starting to come back to see them play? Is there maybe a member of the committee there that might put a few million pounds into the club? But, you know, it sounds like they're taking their time and they want to build slowly.
Dave Waters Meets, a new podcast where we ask all the supplementary questions he would have asked. Waters, that's it for this week. Thank you very much, as always, for joining us on the show. Sorry. If you want to be part of it, you can get involved in the conversation on Twitter at Non-League Show. If there's a question that you think Dave Waters should ask after a guest's gone too, feel free
Just
to get in.
Send
touch.
It to me a couple of weeks after the show's finished and we'll ask them next year if they're still in the job.
You found us, of course, either via our new home at Audio Boom, but we are also on iTunes. Give us a review on there, Stitcher, and the TuneIn Radio app too. And if you want to put the podcast on your website, you can. Or if you want to play us out, I know a number of clubs are doing this. They have their own radio shows before their matches at the weekend. You're more than welcome to use us for free too. Everyone else does. Nonleaguefootballshow.com. You can grab an embedded player for free. Until next time, goodbye.